Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. One of the big stories early on in the coronavirus pandemic was the fear of an insufficient supply of mechanical ventilators, those machines that can take over the work of breathing for critically ill patients. Many press stories have focused on this, from General Motors redeploying to produce them, to university designers working quickly to hack the designs and produce simpler, less expensive varieties. My guest today is a national leader at the interface of healthcare, design, and medical education. He's the director of the Health Design Lab at the Sidney Kimmel Medical College of Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. Dr. Bon Ku is the Robert and Marta Adelson Professor of Medicine and Design at Jefferson, where he practices emergency medicine and teaches the practice of healthcare design to budding health professionals in concert with industrial design students. He's also the co-author of a new book along with Ellen Lupton called Health Design Thinking. Ku and Lupton take readers on a visually gorgeous tour of the principles and methods of designing for healthcare. Specific, to be sure, but many of the fundamentals are applicable to all problem solving. They include numerous case studies as well, and as you'll hear, Dr. Ku believes that all of us are creative, and that it's a skill like many others that can be practiced, harmonized, and nurtured. Dr. Bon Ku, emergency medicine doctor, health design lab director, and co-author of the new book, Health Design Thinking, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa, Medical Monday. Dr. Bon Ku, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start just by having you tell us what you mean when you talk about health design thinking.
Thanks for having me. Health design thinking is a way that we can apply design to solving problems in healthcare.
And so this book is gorgeous. I mean, it's just a beautiful book to thumb through. But you start with these principles of human-centered design, you know, and then there's a principle of co-design, there's a principle of empathy. I guess one thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, give us an example, if you will, of using empathy in a design.
Sure. Empathy is one of the principles that we talk about, and empathy is really the ability to understand the emotional state of another human, to put yourself in their shoes. And as a physician, I think it's really easy to only see a patient and his or her disease and to look at a patient through the lens of their disease. But you know, everyone knows that a disease does not define a patient, that there is this whole world to that person, to that individual, to that human that extends beyond their chronic or acute disease. And I think empathy is crucial to design. It's crucial to being a better physician, because the more we can empathize with our patients, I believe the better care we can give them.
But let's face it, I mean, that has definitely not always been a principle of health design. I mean, we think about medical devices going back, you know, a century or more. It was certainly really all for the benefit of the physician, say.
100%. And, you know, that's why I love the principles that we describe in our book, because all these principles, from empathy to questioning to storytelling, they all help, I believe, both the patient and the human taking care of the patient.
And you have this list of activities. You run a health design lab at Thomas Jefferson University there, and so you have students who go through this curriculum, and you have this list of, I guess, exercises or tasks that they sometimes do, such as, it says, find out how it feels to. I love this list. It says, find your way through a hospital complex without asking for directions. I mean, I've worked many times in different hospitals over my career and been lost many times. I mean, it's always amazing. This one I particularly love. You're an emergency medicine physician. Sleep in the emergency department to simulate the experience of a patient waiting for a hospital bed after being admitted. In one of my previous jobs, I was tasked with trying to figure out how to get patients out of the ER who were admitted, you know, into a hospital bed more quickly. This is a ubiquitous problem.
Absolutely. We wanted to pose real life challenges that anyone who's a physician sees and experiences. And we wanted to take these real life prompts and then turn them into design questions, because I think often in medicine and in healthcare, the problems are so complex and we get really cynical easily. And it's funner to flip it around, and instead of this intractable problem that we face daily, let's turn it into a design challenge, and let's take on the mindset of a designer and think about how we can use some of the methods that we describe in the book, like prototyping and role-playing and storytelling, in order to come up with solutions quickly.
One of the other principles that really resonated with me in reading the book was this idea of social determinants. There's this beautiful diagram, really, of micro and macro determinants and the various categories. But this is something that I think is getting more well-known, is not maybe widely known, but that the medical care that we provide as a healthcare system really only impacts maybe, you know, 10 to 20%. You have it listed here as 11% of the overall health of an individual. But these social circumstances are more than double that, you know, listed here 24%. What do you mean by social determinants?
Sure. For those who aren't familiar, social determinants are all those non-medical factors that impact and determine health outcomes. So things like education, your income, where you live, the food that you're eating. And often people think the care that we actually provide in hospitals and clinics are the biggest factor in how healthy you would be. But research shows over and over again, it's actually not that. That does make a great difference, but it's really all those non-medical factors, those social determinants that have a huge impact in how healthy you're going to be. Just to give you a sense, I'm here in Philadelphia, and there is actually a 20-year lifespan gap just by which zip code that you live in. So your zip code is the strongest determinant of lifespan than your DNA code or genetic code. And so if that's the case, you know, what can we do? How can we intervene in these non-medical factors? Because that is as important and sometimes more important than actual care I give to patients in the emergency department.
So I've talked to different emergency medicine physicians over the years, and sometimes I think not all emergency medicine physicians feel this way, but some feel like, you know, you're maybe what we would call the tip of the spear. You're addressing the kind of very acute problem that somebody comes in for. But after a while of seeing some of those problems again and again, you know, coupled by themes that may have a social origin or social determinant, you start to think about a bigger picture. And so that's why I liked how you included this in your design framework. Now, I'm wondering, with your students and your learners, is it all medical professional students, or does it kind of cut across the spectrum as who you're teaching at the Health Design Lab?
We focus primarily on medical students. You know, we started the first design thinking curriculum for medical school, but then we also have incorporated industrial design students. We have a pretty robust industrial design program, and one of my favorite programs that we do in the Health Design Lab is this program where we pair medical students with industrial design students, link them up with a clinician around a pain point that she or he is facing, and then we have them come up with a solution in the form of a medical device. So we've had teams prototype medical devices that have been patented, and everything from thinking about, you know, how to help patients sleep better when they're admitted to the hospital, to thinking about how to reduce exposure to the anesthesiologist to anesthetic gases. So it's a wildly creative program, because I think when you pair medical people with folks in other sectors and other industries at that intersection, there's a lot of new ideas that can form.
Yeah, and you give really great examples of that, too, in the book. For example, I was really fascinated because I'm an outpatient medical doctor, so I work in just a traditional doctor's office, and you guys studied the layout and sort of the way that how many steps somebody takes, the sort of the ergonomic design. You make the point that, you know, all doctors are now using computers to document things, and so a lot of times in poor design, we have our backs to the people that we work with, our patients. And you pointed out some sort of relatively simple steps and redesign things you could take for an exam room. I was curious, does Jefferson, did they sort of redesign all their exam rooms based on what you guys did?
We haven't redesigned all of our exam rooms. I wish, but I think, you know, what we have done in some cases is really apply some of our observations and have folks think differently about the spaces where we treat patients. So right now, because of the COVID crisis, we have to think about how to space patients 6 feet away from each other when they're waiting to get into a bed. We have to think about how we divide the ER into hot and cold zones, to think about spaces where healthcare workers can don off and don on their PPE, and how to, you know, protect those patients who don't have COVID from getting COVID from infected patients. So these are all design challenges and what we call the, you know, the built environment, the physical layout of spaces. So I can't think of a more important time to bring designers into hospitals right now. So we can think critically about the physical layout spaces and how we can redesign them for a post-COVID world.
Yeah, so I want to come back to that, but first let me reintroduce you. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann, and we're speaking with Dr. Bon Ku, who is director of the Health Design Lab at Thomas Jefferson University, actually the Sidney Kimmel Medical College at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. He's the co-author of a new book called Health Design Thinking that just came out in March, Creating Products and Services for Better Health. And Bon, you mentioned how critical it is to have use design thinking in trying to think about the built environment when you're talking about contagion like the novel coronavirus. And so, you know, one thing as I read the book, I was really wondering, like, you are, you know, really, you talked about prototyping different inventions, bringing together medical students and industrial design students. So in this time of COVID, is there a flurry of new design activity going on? Or do sometimes, I guess, the medical students and a lot of the classroom activity has gone online and over to various online platforms?
Sure, yes. Our medical students, like probably every other medical school in the country, they have not been able to rotate in the hospitals. You know, we want to make sure they're protected. We want to conserve PPE for frontline staff. But we have been involving medical students in just a flurry of design projects during COVID because, you know, what we have really been impressed by is that we need to apply our creativity and our imagination to coming up with solutions, because we've never seen these type of problems before. One project that we're working on is, you know, how to protect healthcare workers when patients are intubated, when they have to go on mechanical ventilation, because that can be a very risky procedure. And so in design, we talk about analogous inspiration of being inspired by industry outside of your own. And so any one of us who's gone to a salad bar, you know, we see these plexiglasses shields that, you know, protect the food from getting contaminated. And so there's this design that we saw that was published in New England Journal about airway boxes and using plexiglass to protect the person who intubates a patient. So we've been using a lot of prototyping and role-playing, these methods that we describe in our book, to see if that can work with our current workflow of this procedure. And we have been getting some of our medical students involved with that.
Now, I've seen a lot in some of the lay press, actually, as the early emphasis on the threatened surge and overwhelming of our healthcare system, especially as really did come to pass in Northern Italy and to some extent in Queens and New York City. Have you had design or thought about, you know, new ventilators or hacking ventilators to try to come up with new models or designs or things like that?
There has been some amazing creativity on how to rapidly manufacture low-cost ventilators, because that was a fear that I had in late February, early March, that there's going to be a shortage of ventilators. And I, as a doctor, I never want to be put in that position of choosing who gets a ventilator and who doesn't in order to live. So I've actually been following this team from MIT and from New York City that has built a rescue ventilator. And they were able to do this in a remarkable time. In 6 weeks, they went from an idea to a fully functional device that can be mass manufactured, actually, and they receive emergency use authorization from the FDA. And I think it's just remarkable the creativity that we're seeing at this time, where we have groups all over the country making everything from face shields to ventilators in responding to this pandemic. I think, you know, we describe prototyping, it's this creative process through making. It's this iterative process, and we've seen just the power of prototyping to come up with rapid solutions during this time.
I mean, it's hard to know because we're still in the throes of it to some extent, but do you think this will have a long-lasting impact on medical and health education that will have design as more a core part of the curriculum?
Healthcare is fundamentally going to change. There's no going back to the normal pre-COVID. I think we are going to see a need for applying a design mindset into healthcare, because what design helps us to do is to get to a solution quicker and to get us to think creatively about finding solutions. I think there's no greater need for creativity during this time of getting doctors and nurses and designers together and to think outside the box and to apply their imagination to solving problems. So we have new problems that we've never faced before coming at us in a rapid way. And I do believe design is one tool that can help us to get through this crisis.
Well, Bon, I'll put you on the spot here. You're an assistant dean, and I'm wondering if you had control of the medical curriculum. You know, we still have to, I guess, train our students to pass their board exams and of course, fundamentally learn how to diagnose illness and give evidence-based treatments. But if you had a magic pen to sort of put more design in the curriculum or perhaps even offer different certificates or degrees, is there a best way to do that? I suppose it's, as you said, it's iterative. You could do it in any number of ways. But I guess, how do you do it at Thomas Jefferson?
Well, what we try to do is to put in front of students real healthcare challenges and to have them come up with solutions by taking them through the design process. And because, you know, medical education is a long, slow process that's focused a lot on memorization. And historically, what we haven't focused on is, you know, how do we give future doctors a skill set so when they're out in the workforce that they can use creativity and problem solving to face the problems that they are seeing? And, you know, I'm grateful for the education that I receive as a medical student, but I'm not that memorizing the Krebs cycle in med school, that knowledge base has not really helped me out during this crisis. You know, what I do need is, you know, how do I create solutions rapidly that can be implemented and doesn't harm my patients? So I think if I were to wave my magic wand is to give students just, you know, real problems that clinicians are facing and have them come up with solutions, whether it's a service or a product, and have them test it out in a controlled, safe way.
How many schools across the United States do you think have at least some element of design in their curriculum? It is a growing movement?
It is a growing movement. There are schools in, you know, probably every region of the country that have had a growing interest in teaching human-centered design to medical students. And I think the challenge, though, has been how do we fit this into a packed, busy med school curriculum? Because there's a lot of stuff in there already. And I think instead of having this as a separate, distinct module in a curriculum, all I can think of it is, you know, how do we, this is more of a mindset, and how do we introduce that into almost every aspect of the curriculum, whether it's, you know, understanding the pathophysiology of diabetes to thinking about, you know, how do we improve, you know, rates of obesity in certain areas of the city that we live in. So I think there is an increasing awareness and a welcoming of introducing different forms of pedagogy like design thinking into medicine.
I wanted to just highlight there are several case studies in the book that you and your co-author highlight. But one, I guess, that stuck out at me was because I'd heard about it in sort of, again, the lay press and the business pages, and I guess Amazon got involved. But the company PillPack, can you just briefly relate that story?
Yes, PillPack is a great example of how they took on this challenge of how might we, you know, redesign the pharmacy experience for many of us, including myself. I take some prescription medications, and I just really hate that experience of going to one of these chain pharmacies and then waiting in line, and then 3 feet ahead of me, I could hear all the personal history being communicated between the customer and the pharmacist, and it's a long, tedious process. So what PillPack did, the founders, was, you know, they used design thinking principles and thought about, you know, how can we redesign this entire experience? So what the company did was, for those who are on a lot of medications, you could actually just go online and order your prescriptions, and you have this sleeve of packets that have your medication that you need to take on that day. So no longer does a patient who's on 5, 6, 7 medications have to put their pills into a pill box, but it's neatly put into a packet. And they went from this idea that they had at a hackathon to, I think, maybe 7 years later to being sold to Amazon for almost $1 billion.
And am I right that PillPack has, one of the innovations was that it's enhanced what we call adherence or compliance, where, I mean, I think you have a statistic in the book that, like, basically more than half of us aren't able to regularly take a scheduled medication. We forget or don't do it, or there's lots of confounding reasons we don't. But doesn't PillPack at least help with that adherence issue?
I don't know the exact stats of, you know, I'm not sure if they did a randomized controlled trial, but I think they have data that they have improved the ease for which patients can take pills, especially those patients who are on multiple medications. I take one pill a day. I forget to even do that, so I can't even imagine if I were taking 5 pills a day. There's no way I would be able to remember that, and I'd be too lazy to put those pills neatly into a pill box. So as soon as I get more on one medication, I would love a solution like PillPack, or I could just easily rip open a packet and take those pills.
Well, that's funny, because one of the exercises that I think you challenge your students with is having them, you say, take a complex set of placebos, some twice a day and some 3 times a day, like the real world where we advise patients or prescribe. You know, it's not necessarily the doctor's fault. That's how the medications, the pharmacokinetics, et cetera, work. But, I mean, you point out, I have the same problem. Taking one pill once a day is hard enough. Can you imagine taking some of them twice a day, some of them 3 times a day, and doing both at the same time? I mean, it's almost like forget about it, right?
Oh, 100%. That's where the principle of empathy comes in, of really, you know, putting yourselves in the shoes of your patients and thinking beyond what just happens in behind the closed doors of a clinic or a hospital, and think about what is that patient's experience with the medications that we prescribe as physicians, or what we're recommending, these lifestyle changes. And it's sometimes very difficult. And I think what design helps us to do is to come up with interventions that have a higher chance of succeeding.
Bon, I want to take you back to the book, and just it's such a beautiful book. I mean, it is really like an art book, but the copy that I have is paperback, and it's really small. So, I mean, it's really handy. I mean, it's an art book that kind of can function as a textbook. It has these basic principles and these case studies. I mean, it's just fun to kind of just sink your teeth into. How did the design for this come about? And I guess, how did you meet your co-author, Ellen Lupton? Tell us that story.
Sure. The book, Ellen and I like to think of the book as a recipe book for healthcare, that we wanted it to be inspiring, but also very practical, just like a cookbook. And that if you pick it up, whether you're a designer or a doctor or a nurse, that you can immediately take some of these recipes that we describe in our methods and case studies and apply them into real practice. When I was thinking about writing a book, I did a lot of research on design books, and my favorite ones by far were by Ellen Lupton. She's a famous design author. She's also a curator at the Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum, which is the only museum in the country dedicated to design. And we happened to be on a panel together 2 years ago in New York City. And after the panel, I'm awestruck. And I go up to her, and I actually have a copy of one of her books that she signs. Then I said, Ellen, you should really write a book like yours on design, but designing for healthcare. And I was shocked when she invited me to co-write it with her. And so I think what I appreciate about Ellen is that she has these beautiful illustrations. She has this gift of storytelling. And so she makes what can be an ambiguous concept design and makes it very practical and easy to understand. So that's why we invited so many contributors to share with us of how design helped them to make a better product or service.
Well, you guys did a sensational job. Bon, I want to just finish by asking you about your background. I mean, you're an emergency medicine physician, very well trained, a long pathway of university and medical school and residency and fellowship. Where does design come in for you? I mean, I personally, and I know a little bit from reading about you, that the medical education process sometimes feels like it stultifies some of that creativity, but you have come out on the other end and are just flourishing, kind of inventing new things left and right. So how did you get to that spot?
Yeah, I knew from a very early age I was going to be a doctor. My parents are immigrants from Korea, and so I think they brainwashed me from age three that I was going to have to go to medical school.
Wow.
And throughout, I think maybe college and med school, even residency training, I was jealous of my friends who were designers or architects or were in fields that were quote-unquote creative. And I just was jealous of their ability to have a job where they get to apply their imagination to problem solving. And I thought, man, why can't we do that in medicine? Because medicine has probably the most complex problems out there. And I believe that we're all creative as human beings. That's just part of who we've been built. And that creativity is not something that some people have and some people don't, and that creativity is actually a skill that could be taught. And so I had this chance that my dean gave to me of, you know, how we can get our medical students to think more creatively, and design thinking happened to be just provide a perfect framework and methodology for us to introduce creativity to doctors. And so I love my job right now because I get to go into work, and it is the most creative thing I do, going to work, and it's a creative pursuit. And I talk to a lot of college students who are thinking about med school, and I go, you should definitely do it because you can still be a physician and apply your creativity and imagination.
Well, you're a great role model, and it's just so nice to talk to you. And congratulations on the book. It really is a work of art in and of itself. The name of the book is Health Design Thinking, Creating Products and Services for Better Health, and it's co-authored by my guest today, Bon Ku, who is the director of the Health Design Lab at the Sidney Kimmel Medical College of Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. Bon Ku, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.